This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Utterly Moderate is the official podcast of the Connors Institute for Nonpartisan Research and Civic Engagement at Shippensburg University. Please visit us at connorsinstitute.org to sign up for our free email newsletter. While you are there, also be sure to check out all of our great research and resources.
Please listen carefully.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the program. This is the Utterly Moderate Podcast, and I'm your host, Lawrence Eppard. Thanks for joining us for another episode. We've had a lot going on at the Connors Institute, and so we've been off for a few weeks, but we're back on our regular schedule, and I'm very happy to be back with you and happy that you joined us today. So thank you. We got a good episode for you today. So I teach a variety of courses here at Shippensburg University, one of which is environmental sociology. And a few weeks ago at the end of the semester, we were having a conversation about the food system in the U.S., about agriculture, and there's a lot of moving parts in that discussion. There's all sorts of things. I'm not going to run down the whole list, but one of the things that we discuss is the workforce, and a big part of that workforce is both legal and unauthorized immigrants. And so we talk about that, the variety of issues that surround that, and also increasingly in recent years, I've had to include a discussion of misinformation and disinformation in that class as well. And so my buddy Jim Swift, who writes for The Bulwark, he had a great story about just all of these issues all tied together, food and agriculture and migrant labor and, you know, legal versus unauthorized and misinformation and disinformation. And so I just thought, hey, I'm going to ask Jim and see if he'll talk to my students. And he agreed to. And so he joined us here at Shippensburg University via Zoom and talked to my class about writing that story and sort of the bigger lessons from that story. So I think it's a good conversation, and I hope you enjoy. All right, well, let's get started. Super excited about this conversation. We've got Jim Swift from The Bulwark. As I told you guys leading up to today's conversation, Jim is a journalist, commentator. He worked for the conservative Weekly Standard magazine. And when that went under, he and his colleagues who refused to join the Trump train and refused to change their conservative politics, they decided to start The Bulwark. And as I told you guys, I've had you guys read a couple pieces from The Bulwark. I really value their commentary. I may not agree with everything they say, but they're good faith actors. So they certainly have a conservative point of view, but they're not going to lie. They're not going to distort the facts. And I really appreciate that. And so anyhow, Jim, super excited you're here. Thank you for joining us at Shippensburg University and talking to our students today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I mean, as you can see on my wall behind me, it's like a mausoleum of what I considered the good Republicans who are all, pretty much all dead now. John McCain, John Warner and Ted Stevens, you can't see. And, people who aren't welcome in today's Republican Party. And as Dr. Eppard said, I worked at a magazine. We got shut down because we were anti-Trump Republicans. We started our own magazine. Which I wouldn't recommend. It's a lot of work, takes years off your life. But then we just kind of grew our publication, and as the threats to democracy increased, I know that's not what we're here to talk about today, We have a lot of center left folks who now also write for us too, kind of talking about institutions, you know, making sure that we strengthen guardrails, things like that. But I think we're here to talk about ag labor, illegal labor, immigration policy, and a piece I wrote about a year or two ago. Is that right, Doc?
Yeah. So in this class, we've been talking about the role of immigrants, both legal and unauthorized immigrants, in the American agricultural industry. And so we've also been talking about misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. And so this story that you wrote, Jim, hits on a lot of those important points we've been talking about. And I'll let you kind of take it away. But it's a story of someone named Laura Loomer and a conspiracy that she starts that goes viral. And anyhow, so why don't we start there? Let's talk about who is Laura Loomer.
Okay, she's an extremely online lunatic, she's known for her phrase "You got loomered." Back before Elon Musk took over Twitter/X, she was part of the kind of cabal of people who was claiming to be shadow banned. And then she was later outright censored for her extreme views. I mean, she's banned by Uber and Lyft for like things she said about Muslims in cars, like total wacko. And she chained herself to like the door of Twitter for hours. She ran for Congress in Florida. And around the time I wrote the story, she was running for Congress in Florida. Spoiler alert, she did not win. So she kind of is known amongst the kind of more far extreme right circles. She's taken seriously by nobody of good repute. But she does have a lot of sway with the kind of online very far right. And she just posted this video saying that the Biden administration was busing illegal immigrants into this hotel in Florida with no proof whatsoever, other than I assume that she assumed, because they had brown skin, that therefore they must be illegal.
Do we have any, before you keep going, do we have any idea how she was tipped off that this bus was there?
No, we don't. I mean, a local reporter, Christopher Heath, a friend of mine, was covering the story locally. And he said, you know, I think this kind of deserves some wider attention. Not that we should be giving Laura Loomer attention, but the story, as they often do, like that story at the Rainbow Bridge in Canada, you guys may have seen this. Ted Cruz and all these other people made this assumption that these were terrorists trying to cross the border of Canada, that thing. And, you know, that became a viral lie before it even became debunked. And it was actually a tragedy. Two old people just lost control of their car. But it got past Laura Loomer. If it was just Laura Loomer spouting out nonsense and everyone ignoring it, that would have been one thing. But other people were picking up on it.
I want to stay in the weeds on this. So,
okay.
So she gets this video. Yeah. And you guys, literally, it's just brown people getting off a bus.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's it. And so she has no facts, but she captions the video with, "Biden's America," right? They're getting credit cards and all that kind of stuff. So describe sort of how she packaged the video and how it went viral.
Yeah. And, you know, the buses and caravans have kind of taken on their own sort of mythology on the right. I mean, the irony, of course, is that Texas and Florida are using buses and planes to actually ship migrants of legal and illegal status to other places to make points. But, you know, the buses of illegal voters and whatnot. I mean, it's become like a total repeated conspiracy on the right. If it's a bus full of ethnic people, there must be some nefarious reason behind it, unless Governor Greg Abbott or Ron DeSantis is doing it. Then it's totally cool. I'm being facetious there. But I don't know how it came to her attention or if she had filmed it herself. She posted it there. And, you know, I can go back and look unless it's been deleted. That's part of the problem with some of these fringe accounts, is eventually they get you know, Elon Musk wouldn't do that necessarily, but a lot of these more responsible social media networks will eventually just say enough, you're not going to post anymore. And then they get deleted. So in my job, I end up having to take screenshots or download the source video that they posted, because I find that a lot of times when I write about these things, I go back a year later and none of it's there, and it makes my story look incomplete or bad. So now I try and preserve those things. So at least when I'm writing about something, I can say, this is what that person was alleging, and this is how they framed it.
I want to get to how you came about it in a minute, but before we get there, let's talk about how it exploded, right? So she puts it out there on Twitter, and then a bunch of other people, prominent people, pick it up, right?
Well, I wouldn't say prominent. There was a guy whose last name is Pulitzer, like the award, but he himself is not prominent, but he's a kind of a kooky failed inventor, and he was part of the Cyber Ninjas, if you may remember, during the election in my former, not home state, but the state I worked for in the U.S. Senate when I was a government employee. He was part of the people who are like alleging, you know, there were bamboo ballots shipped in from China, you know, read between the lines there, guys, you know, like Sharpie markings, all this kind of stuff. So like one conspiracy theorist shared this video and another prominent on the far right conspiracy theorist shared it. And it started kind of blowing up, and then it kind of adding a patina of seriousness to it. This, you would think an elected official, at least I used to be naive enough to think elected officials knew better. And then I worked in Congress. Anthony Sabatini, the state rep who was running to be a congressman, and he started pushing it. And he's not all dissimilar from Loomer. He just hasn't chained himself to buildings, you know, like, so he was really the one that kind of started promoting it and getting it out there. And this local reporter was, I think, right, saying like this, if we don't really nip this in the bud, it's going to go and become a thing. And, you know, I'm doing my part. I think you guys should do something on it. So I jumped in and I started reporting on it, too. And I was able to find this nursery called Doer Nurseries down in Florida. And I felt very bad for the people that I talked to, because what a lot of people don't understand is that when people get thrust into the limelight unknowingly, I mean, these people were doing nothing wrong. The nurseries, the immigrants, they were people who were here legally with a visa. And, you know, my personal editorializing is, even if they weren't here legally, I don't think that the scorn and the kind of hate that comes when people go viral is anywhat appropriate. And so I was probably like the 20th reporter to call this nursery. And, you know, they were able to confirm to me that they're part of the H-2B visa program, or H-2A, excuse me, got to be precise here. And, you know, just as a member of the media and a former staffer myself, I would have expected that before my boss, and I worked for a senator and a member of the House of Representatives, before that person spoke on anything, that they would go to somebody like me as a staffer saying, I saw this, or a constituent sent this to me. Can you go in and find out whether the allegations are true? And I would go, and I would go through, and these lists of people who are participating in H-2A visa programs, it's public list. You know, it's not like a secret ballot or something. You have to go through formal programs. And, you know, this guy just didn't care about the truth, Sabatini, and he just saw it as an opportunity to smash Biden and maybe differentiate himself in this very crowded primary. Didn't work out. He lost. You know, other candidates in the race is not to be seen as not taking immigration seriously, all jumped in on it, too. But as you know, seen my piece, none of them were very serious people to begin with. You know, I don't know. It's hard to know the degree to which you kind of can stop something from becoming viral. You know, because the people who believe this conspiracy theory are going to say, oh, Jim Swift at the Bulwark, can't trust him. You know, they've already come up with every excuse in the book to not believe anything that the main, I wouldn't say we're the mainstream media per se, but the mainstream media or media they don't agree with, those people are too far gone to be reasoned with. But, you know, the goal is to stop people who can be reasoned with from getting this and thinking it's true, because there's so much disinformation out there. And I think the human mind only has capacity to kind of read headlines, so to speak. On a daily basis, that like no one does this deep dive like we are doing in this class right now on one thing. You know, anything you hear that's sensational, the truth is in the weeds, are probably like this, but no one wants to spend 40 minutes. And granted, you guys have to do it because your professor's making you. Not a lot of people have that sort of BS detector to think, could that really be true? I mean, most people don't even know that H-2A visa partners and programs and companies are searchable, right? So they'll just kind of see this and they'll get it maybe as a notification on their phone, a pop-up or something that somebody shares on social media. And they'll be like, man, I can't believe that Biden's doing this. Biden had nothing to do with it. And, that's kind of what prompted me to write the story is I wanted to have at least a record that, you know, my parents live in Florida, not far from where all this went down. I didn't want my dad coming. I mean, I didn't write this for my dad, but my dad is a Fox News type viewer, Trump voting Republican. And, you know, I could see my dad just saying like, can you believe Biden sending buses of illegal people, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And, I kind of took a personal interest in this story because I know that area. And, I never talked about it with my dad, but that my dad didn't come to me saying that he had heard this and wanted to know if I knew whether it was true. I consider the story a success in that front.
And Jim, to top it all off, at the end of this story, you write that one of the politicians that was really aggressively pushing this story, when one of these big protests happens against these migrant workers, he ends up not showing up and going to a different fundraiser, I believe. So tell us what happened there.
Yeah, I thought that was like the bacon of the water chestnut, right? Like of irony. The guy who helped light the fuse couldn't be bothered to go protest the lie that he was spreading because he wanted to go meet with, quote, Florida legend, this guy named Alfie Oaks, who owns this kind of bougie MAGA version of Whole Foods called Seed to Table in Naples. And so rather than, be there rallying against the lie that he's helping perpetuate, he's out there to go glad hand and shake hands with a January 6th supporting mask opponent, also kind of conspiracy rich guy who owns this grocery store, who sent people to January 6th. He paid for buses. And I take that very personally as a former Hill staffer. And I'll just leave it at that because I don't want to go down that rabbit hole and it makes me angry. The irony is, since this guy owns the grocery store and a lot of the stuff, since it's an independent grocery store, not part of a chain like Kroger or something, he's getting a lot of produce locally. And I'd encourage you guys to look up. There's a city called Immokalee, Florida. It's a huge part of the agricultural part of Florida. And there's a lot of immigration protests there because many of the people who work there are undocumented. Spoiler alert. The guy who owns a grocery store has been busted for breaking the law on immigration for his agriculture because the farms that support his grocery store, and he does not care. He goes, he said something, I forget the exact quote, it's in my story. You know, on any given day, like 40-80% of the people here are not here legally. And I just, the hypocrisy of this guy, demeaning legal immigrants, because basically they're on a bus in Brown, to then go shake hands with a guy who is perpetuating the thing he is so concerned about. It's just the levels of hypocrisy. It just were astounding to me. But it just kind of shows the kind of messed up priorities. And it's depressing, unfortunately, that a lot of politicians these days, and I'm not going to both sides of here, it's almost entirely on the right, on this issue of immigration are just abject, total hypocrites. And it's frustrating because you can see, I'll show my camera up here. John Kyle, who was my boss in the Senate, when I started working for him in 2007, we worked with Ted Kennedy, the lion of the Senate, on an immigration reform bill that was really the last best chance at immigration reform that we had before the issue really became, it's always been politicized, but became just something that, you know, we're seeing it right now in 2024, that Republicans in the Senate are trying to come up with an immigration compromise to do something that strengthens the border and also reforms our broken system. But House Republicans are saying, no, we want to make this an issue so it hurts Biden in 2024. Spoiler alert, it doesn't just hurt Biden. It hurts Americans. It hurts American businesses. It hurts immigrant families who want to come here, immigrant families who are here. And, you know, like it's insane to me that we're pushing 20 years almost. It'll be 20 years in 2027 of the failure of the immigration, the Kyle McCain reform bill, and basically nothing's happened. So 15 years, it's just emblematic of a Congress that really doesn't want to solve things. And the people who want to go there, like Sabatini, in my view, are even worse. So I'm glad he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, the Republican Party, I'm sure in similar ways to the Democratic Party, has a lot of different factions in it, right? So you've got people who are motivated by abortion and people who are motivated by taxes and this and that. And, you know, the groups can be really different from each other. And I'm assuming, and again, I'm not a Republican, so I don't know this, but I'm assuming that there is this like Chamber of Commerce faction that is well aware of the realities of immigration and of agricultural work and, you know, the issues surrounding legal versus unauthorized immigration. And I'm assuming that there are some very realistic people there that have a grasp of this, and maybe they just aren't the ones who are in full control of the party, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I would posit that a lot of those people, and my type of a lot of people I used to work with who went on after my boss left Congress or the Senate, went on to be lobbyists and things. A lot of them have just left the Republican Party as a result. And the Chamber of Commerce, as you point out, I mean, it's kind of a boogeyman for people on the kind of union left. They don't like the chamber, but the chamber has found itself in the crosshairs of the Republican Party. And they've seen themselves, and I wrote about this last year during the midterms, they actually started endorsing Democrats like Abigail Spanberger, who is my congresswoman, who's running for governor, who's very. Say again.
But you're a big supporter of.
I'm a big fan of hers. I think the Democrats need more folks like her, and I don't blame her for not wanting to be in the House anymore. Being a governor would be a cooler and an improvement, but even though you can't run for re-election. But whenever I have like friends tell me they're thinking about running for the House of Representatives, I question why they would ever want to work there, because I've worked there and it sucks. And that was back when it was normal. So, you know, there's a whole side of immigration from the left perspective that we're not even addressing here, because the big holdup is Republicans don't want to reform the system until it used to be until the border was secure. If you can ever truly secure the border, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, right? Nothing would ever be enough for some folks. But unfortunately, the last Republican president, who I will not name, you know, really amped up the xenophobia, you know, with visa changes and denying people entry and calling people rapists and bad people, and started his campaign that way. And that kind of, I think, supercharged a part of the party that has always been there, but the Chamber of Commerce types and even the kind of somewhat sane, not moderate Republicans basically told to shut their mouths and keep quiet. You know, those people felt emboldened to speak, and unfortunately is become a larger
part of Republican politics is now being very nativist and opposed to even legal immigration. And that's, in my mind, very unfortunate. And, you know, we could spend another 40 minutes talking about demographics and our country's birth rate and everything else. But, you know, I'm very pro-immigrant and, you know, I'm a squish. So I'm pro-amnesty because letting people stay here illegally is also amnesty. you know, everyone is for amnesty. It's a question of what amnesty they're for. Because it's not practical to deport tens of millions of people, and it's not humane or right either, but that's me editorializing.
So Jim, so I've got to ask you this, and it's going to sound kind of funny, and I mean for it to be funny, but, nobody likes you. I say that I'm being a little bit facetious, but you know, you and I are friends. I, of course, like you. But what I mean by that is, you know, you're not a Democrat, and so you may have some temporary allies and alliances to try to stop Trump from burning down democracy, but, you know, they're not your people, and large swaths of the Republican Party also reject you now because you won't go along with Trump. So can you talk a little bit about that, of being sort of a political orphan and, you know, being rejected by, you know, large portions of your own party as well as the other party? I mean, how has that felt?
Yeah, I mean, getting fired and on top of that is doubly depressing. But, you know, the Weekly Standard magazine, and you can see some of the covers on the walls behind me, you know, was around for 20 some odd years. And I read it as a freshman in high school in 1999, to give you an idea of how old I am. Spoiler alert, 40. But, you know, I was an very early subscriber. I read it through college. I read it when I worked on Capitol Hill. And then when I kind of burned out on Capitol Hill, because there's only so many years where you can wear a suit every day, make $25,000 or so, and you have to work insane hours. That's not conducive to like a wife or a family or children or dogs. And it's my dog's birthday today. I didn't bring him because I didn't want to distract the class with his cuteness. But, you know, I mean, getting fired also really sucked, and losing the institution, because the Weekly Standard was kind of probably the sanest of what you would say, you know, right or far right conservative media, depending on what your lens is. We were probably the sanest of them. And our billionaire owner shut us down because he owned another magazine that he couldn't tell what to do. Or he could tell what to do. He couldn't tell us what to do because he bought us. We had a contract that meant he couldn't tell us what we could or could not write. And he hated that. And we lost a lot of subscribers over our opposition to Trump. And people don't like being told that they're wrong. You know, and so it was depressing in that aspect. I don't mind losing friends, or quote unquote friends or acquaintances. You know, I mean, my parents and my in-laws and other people who haven't kind of gone on my journey because they're kind of ancillary to politics. They think like I'm the dog that went to the farm upstate. Like, he's still a good dog. You know, so like I'm okay with that. I'm at peace with it. But you do feel like a crazy person sometimes talking with the people who, I said earlier, only really have a headline level depth. They hear something, they see the headline, maybe they see or hear a report on it, and they just take it to be true when it's could be 100% false, like the story that we're talking about here, the Sabatini story and the Loomer story. It does make you feel like you're taking crazy pills sometimes. And I can't agree to disagree with people who won't do the work. And as a result, you do kind of have to disassociate yourself with folks. You know, like, I'm not going to destroy my relationship with actual family and friends over politics, but I'll just tell them, you have no idea what you're talking about. You're wrong. And if you want to go and spend 40 minutes like we are in this class, granted, you guys are all captively doing this, but you did show up today, so thank you. But Mike, if you do want to go down this road, I'm happy to do it with you. But like, I could do this for all these things because it's my job. And you know, but I'm not going to agree to disagree with you when I know you're wrong and I can prove it. you know, I give them all free subscriptions if they want, but nobody asks. I don't know if Shippensburg gives you guys like free New York Times, Washington Post, all that kind of stuff, but I think it's very important. And you guys, you know, like the disinformation out there on TikTok and Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook. I know I'm getting like going on older. I'm going from young to old in terms of platforms. Anyone here on MySpace? No? Okay. but, I mean, the amount of disinformation out there, is nuts. I mean, it's kind of like my parents saying, well, my day, we only had three networks. And, you know, now if you go to your Verizon, if you people don't cut the cord or your parents don't, you know, there are like 75 news channels. It's insane. So the amount of information out there, and it's hard to know who to trust. And I know Dr. Eppert is, and I've talked in the past about the kind of the media bias chart and where places fall and everything. It's very important to kind of, you know where you get your sources.
Jim would go on to talk about some other topics and take some questions from my students, but the audio wasn't really great, so we'll end it here. But anyway, love Jim. Jim's a good friend of mine, and I think The Bulwark is an outstanding publication. Again, it comes from a political perspective. It comes from a conservative perspective. And so it's partisan in that sense, but it's a good faith commentary on subjects from a conservative point of view. And so they don't distort their facts. They don't lie. You know, they aren't out there trying to spread disinformation, that kind of stuff. It's, hey, let's agree to what the factual basis of this story is. And now we can talk about the various policy proposals and why we as conservatives might support this particular approach to this problem, but we can agree to, you know, the universe of facts about, you know, what's going on. So anyhow, check them out. Check out The Bulwark. Check out our site, connorsinstitute.org. And I guess I'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just sing the song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you. Till we meet again.
Goodbye, good luck, and may the good Lord take a liking to you.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.